Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 972 Studio on your radio this afternoon. Not so cold out there, but not so hot either. Hope you're having a fantastic Monday afternoon, because we are having a fantastic show lined up for you today. Later on, we're going to be talking about a ward council election that might change everything in South Africa's future, and also where to go for best hot springs in South Africa if you are feeling the chills. But before we do that, I'm very excited to have on the line with us today a guest who has just written an absolutely jaw-droppingly interesting book, and I think that you're going to find it fascinating, because if we look at the history of Israel and South Africa relations, people always think about the relations, particularly that the old apartheid government had with Israel, but that wasn't always the case. There was a time when South Africa was, or Israel rather, was connecting with the ANC and with other liberation movements from all over Southern Africa. And this is not a history that has been adequately told until now. And to help us do it, we have Dr. Asher Lubotsky from the University of Houston and the Israel-Africa Relations Institute. And he is talking to us about his new book, Shifting Solidarities, the South African Anti-Apartheid Movement Perception of Zionism. Dr. Lubotsky, thank you so much for joining us on Chai FM.
Thank you so much, Benji. I'm really happy to be here and to talk to the South African audience.
Now, just before we start, I just want to check in that you are safe and that everything is, it was a bit of a rough night, I know, in Israel. I will make sure that everyone is okay.
Yes, we had an early wake-up call by the Houthis today at just before 6 a.m., but besides this, we are good.
I'm very, very happy to hear that. Never boring in the Middle East. Now, this book, as I said, covers a part of Israel's relationship with South Africa that isn't so well known. I think that some books, particularly written in the late 2010s, but also before it becomes a political issue, the relationship between Israel and South Africa under apartheid has been quite well covered. But this part about the liberation movements never really was. So what caused you to get into this area of studies, in particular Israel and Africa relations? Because it is something, this is your specialty, and it's there's not many Africa experts when it comes to Israel these days. So talk to us about why that was of interest to you.
Right, so I got into a PhD program at Indiana University in the United States, and I got into the track, the African history track. I actually first wanted to write about Germans in Southwest Africa, today's Namibia. But after I read a little more about the history, and as an Israeli myself, as you can hear, I just discovered, right? Also, not many Israelis know about this, but I just discovered that there was such a rich and complex Israeli history in Africa, right? African-Israeli relations, and especially in the 60s. And I didn't know much about this, and I read more and more, and I saw that there was some literature about Israel and the liberated countries, right? The countries that got independence in the 60s, late 50s, 60s. And South Africa was obviously not liberated at the time, right? It was still under apartheid rule, but people didn't really talk about South Africa at all regarding Israel in Africa in the 60s, right? They talked about, as you mentioned, right? They talked about Israel and the apartheid regime in the 70s and the 80s, mostly the kind of alliance that was between the two countries. But no one really mentioned South Africa before that time, which was, to me, pretty weird. I just wondered what happened, you know, what did Israel do? Because I did see that Israel did support some liberation movements in other parts of Africa, in Kenya, in Tanganyika, today's Tanzania, in Mozambique and Angola. And what happened in South Africa? We didn't really know. I saw some clues in the primary sources from time to time, but I was like, maybe there is a bigger story here that we don't know. So I took it as a project. I found tons of material. And I cover from the late 40s, since the establishment of Israel, until the pretty much mid-70s. And yeah, I think that I don't barely was written about this before, and now we have a book that covers this time.
So we're talking to Dr. Asher Lubotsky today. He is from the University of Houston and the Africa-Israel Research Institute, and we're chatting to him about his new book on the history of Israel-South Africa relations at the liberation level. Do stay tuned, because after the break we're going to be finding out what some of these source materials actually were. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
101.9 Chai FM, I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the 927 show, studio show. So we've been talking today to Dr. Asher Lubotsky about how he got into this question of what were the relationships like between the liberation movements like the ANC and the PAC and some others who you've definitely never heard of, and Israel, and what was driving these sorts of relations. Now, before the break, Doctor, you were saying that you were looking at some primary sources that were showing up, which is an interesting thing because, you know, from the 40s, not really anyone who's alive anymore to talk to about this particular topic. So how did you go about starting to piece together what these relationships looked like?
That's a great question. So I had three main bodies of sources, what we call, historians call primary sources, like the sources that talk from the time. So the first one was press of the time, right? So the liberations movement before the early 60s, after Sharpeville massacre, right, apartheid regime suppressed all the kind of free liberation press and the liberation movements in general. But before that, they had a very interesting press scene, mostly connected to the Communist Party or affiliated, and they wrote a lot. And if you know, maybe The Guardian was, and then it changed names throughout the decade, in the 50s and the early 60s. So there was a lot of press that liberation movement leaders wrote in, and Mandela wrote in there, you know, sometimes under different names, right? But, you know, Mandela and a lot of the Jewish leaders of the anti-apartheid movement wrote in there, actually ran this press, if we want to be accurate even. So you had all those kind of texts from the time. So, for example, 1948, Israel is established, right? You'd think the ANC and the communists would be upset about this, but not at all. You see their op-eds, and you see that they actually the main editorials of the time praising Israel, and they even say "Long live Israel." I have the Communist Guardian, right? It's pretty much was the mouthpiece also of the ANC. Okay, at the time there was some connection between the movements, and the Guardian was the main national liberation movement journal, right, a newspaper, so weekly or daily, and daily at the time, and they had an editorial saying "Long live Israel," like the day or two after Israel was established, right, mid-May 1948, and you see this, and you see how they make sense of the things of the war, and you see that during the what we call in Israel the independence war of 48, 49, you see they were supportive throughout all this war of Israel. They showed support for Israel at the time. Sometimes, you know, you take the analysis they had, you know, the commentary they had, and it would look like it was like a Ben-Gvir writing these things, okay? Almost. So it was very, very interesting. So you had this press. So sometimes it was weeklies and dailies. Sometimes it was more kind of journals, like for like more deeper analysis. And of course, it got more complicated throughout the years. The Suez War, right? The what we call in Israel the Sinai War, you know, 56 was a very troubling times. They had a lot of influence from the Soviet Union, right? A lot of them were communists, right? So they had a lot of influence from the Soviet Union. Soviet Union turned very anti-Semitic and anti-Israel around 52, 53. So they got it all, and they saluted, and they had to adopt the party line in a way. But you saw there was complexity all this time. In the 60s, again, they appreciated Israel and liked Israel. So the Eichmann trial, right?
Mm-hmm.
1961. So you saw all of this kind of like support or admiration This is one thing. The other thing is Israeli archives. Israeli archives have a lot in them. They are digitized now, most of them, so very easily accessible. And you see that Israel had a lot of covered, right, secret relations between its diplomatic representatives in Africa, mostly in Dar es Salaam in Tanganyika, Tanzania, right? But also from other capitals and the liberation movements. And you see that the liberation movements also sent pleads to Israel, give us money, support us, because we are like you. We are all anti-racist. The apartheid regime is like the Nazis. They, after us, they'll go for the Jews, you know? And like they wrote those things. And they appeal. It wasn't only just like give us money and, you know, whatever. And it was like kind of ideological language. They had to know this kind of concept, even if they didn't believe 100% of it. They had to know that those concepts exist, that Israel represents something, maybe anti-racist language would appeal to Israel. So that was during the 60s. And Israel did help, mostly the PAC, actually, did help the PAC. Israel wanted to help the ANC too, but when Israel decided to help the ANC, it was already too late for the ANC, because the ANC was too embroiled in alliances with Egypt, with Algeria, and with the Soviet Union, and Israel was not really a player they wanted to openly, or like at least like majorly, go with. That was like 63, 64, but before that, the ANC wanted Israeli help. In 1960, 1961, we see also letters from the ANC and meetings between Israeli diplomats and the ANC leaders. Tambo, Oliver Tambo, the most importantly. So you have this, so the, and the third body of resources were autobiographies. Some of those liberation leaders who wrote their memories. Now this, you need to look at this very suspiciously, because they write it much later, right? So maybe do not admit what they actually thought in the 50s and 60s, you know, when they write it in the 90s or in the early 2000s, right? Because the situation then was very different, and Israel's image by then was much different, right? But you still see some clues, some hints in their autobiographies that may make you think, okay? So those are pretty much the three body of sources. Sometimes, you know, you have interviews, but they are really, as you said, we're talking about like 70 years ago, 60 years ago. Those people mostly are not with us anymore.
We're talking to Dr. Asher Lubotsky today about his new book on the relationship between the liberation movements in Israel, called Shifting Solidarities, the South African Anti-Apartheid Movement's Perception of Zionism. And if you want to be part of the conversation, please do send us your questions, 061-895-1019, and we can put it onto the good doctor. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is Chai FM.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
101.9 Chai FM, talking today to Dr. Asher Lubotsky from Houston University and the Israel Africa Research Institute about his new book on the relationship between Israel and the liberation movements. Now, Doctor, one of the things which you mentioned a little bit earlier, the kind of the why of why were these relations actually occurring, and something which struck me as very interesting is that there is this long period before 48, about 50 years, when the Zionist movement and the Pan-Africanist movement, I think chiefly in America and the Caribbean, have this dialogue, and that builds up a kind of engagement between Jews and Africans and the African diaspora who are trying to liberate the continent and also build a Jewish state. And I'm interested in your research. Did this cultural engagement affect here all the way in the bottom of South Africa the way that these liberation movements were thinking about the Jews and thinking about Israel as a project?
It's a good question. There was what we call sometimes Black Zionism, mm-hmm. okay, or African Zionism, which was Marcus Garvey, right, and ideas and others too, that Africans should first be liberated, but also African diasporas, just like the Jewish diasporas, should return to their homeland in Africa, right? So those ideas existed in South Africa. The Garvey movement was pretty popular, and I do believe that it affected. I don't have like a real, you know, connection that I see, you know, how the idea moved from maybe North America or the Caribbean to South Africa. I don't have this link, but you see in the language that African nationalism and the ANC was an African nationalist movement to some extent, right? Maybe a moderate one to at some point. You know, later the PAC quit, right? Sobukwe, right, quit and established the PAC a bit later because it wasn't nationalistic enough. But you do see in the, for example, in the people from the Youth League of the ANC, right? People that the generation of Mandela, right? The people that were a bit more quote unquote radical compared to the old guard of the ANC, that they really were more aware of the idea of Zionism. They were more aware of the connection between Jews and Palestine, right, Israel. They were aware that this is their kind of indigenous land. You see it in their text, right? They never really, you know, today you see all these kind of Jews are white, Jews are not connected to Israel. You really did not see it in the late 40s or the early 50s. They were also very, very aware of the Holocaust that happened and the victimhood, right, of Jewish people. To them, it all made sense. Zionism made sense. Actually, I saw, and this is one of the articles that I saw in the ANC publication at that time, that they treated the you know, the Arabs, the, you know, the back then you talked about Jews and Arabs, not so much Palestinians, right? Because both were Palestinians, right? The Jews and the Arabs were Palestinians. But you talk about the Arabs, and they say the Arabs in Palestine, they are the imperialists. It's clear, and they also, some many of them had some kind of a religious Christian background, right, upbringing. It's clear that the Jews are indigenous to Israel, to this land. So it's like this is how kind of they treated it, and this is why I think African nationalism was much more embracing, right, much more ready to collaborate or to work together with Zionism, with Jews in general, with Israel later. So you can see it in South Africa, definitely.
Absolutely fascinating. Now, I want to get onto some of the stuff that the ANC engaged with in a bit. And it's interesting that it might have been just like Israelis not getting their act together early enough that cost them the relationship with the ANC, which is kind of an interesting thought experiment. But I think one of the untold stories in your book is the story of the PAC, right? The PAC was the party that really was kind of responsible for what happened at Sharpeville. Robert Sobukwe is probably one of the most famous liberation movement leaders. And there was this period of about a decade when actually they were the closest Southern African movement to Israel. So talk to us a little bit about that, because I suspect that a lot of people wouldn't know that history because it just never really been told before this book.
Right, and especially because after the 70s, the PAC became very anti-Israeli, even more than the ANC. Okay, so so they had no interest at all to admit that any pre-existing relations ever existed, right? So, this is it. So, the Israel was at a weird policies towards South Africa, complex policies. On the one hand, Israel was very pro-African independence, pro-anti-colonialism, all this stuff, and officially also very, at least, you know, in terms of statements, very anti-apartheid. That was until the 60s. But at the same time, for being this kind of anti-colonialist, anti-apartheid, Israel needed South Africa, the regime there, and the people of South Africa, for a kind of national security issues. For example, the Jewish South African community was very important for Israel because they, for one, they donated a lot of money to Israel, right? The highest per capita, you guys know it, the highest per capita donations in the world to Israel was from the Jewish South African community. So you may say that the Jewish South African community maybe was the most Zionistic community in the world. So there was this connection. There was also some state-to-state things that Israel may have needed from South Africa at the time. Not much, as we think, but maybe Israel was pretty isolated, I remind you, at the time. So they needed to, like, get weapons and stuff like this. So Israel was kind of conflicted about the relations. So they didn't want to go too anti-apartheid at the beginning, right? They also didn't want, they had a, because of the connection with the Jewish community, a lot of Jews in South Africa told them, don't be too anti-apartheid, right? Because we will pay the price in the end, right? Because we know also how anti-Semitic some of the leaders of the National Party were at the time. And the Jews said, don't boycott South Africa, because first you boycott us, because we are white South Africans, right? But we also, you bring the wrath of the National Party against us. So Israel was kind of conflicted. They were anti-apartheid to some extent, but not all the way. So when the ANC approached Israel in the early 60s, Israel was not yet in the mindset of helping directly liberation movements, okay, helping them directly. Because this was one step more. Israel voted for sanctions against South Africa. Was the only Western, the first and only Western country to vote for sanctions against the apartheid regime. Okay, when the USA and the Great Britain and all the Western countries voted against, Israel voted for it. With the Soviet Union and the Arab states and Asian states and all of this. So Israel was there, but to help directly the liberation movement, that was a bit... In 61, that was a bit too much. So when the ANC approached Israel, Israel was not ready yet. They were very nice to the ANC, and they hosted them, but they didn't say, we're going to give you money, right? Or definitely not weapons, right? That was 60-61. By 1963, Israel moved even more into this anti-apartheid stance. Israel decided that in order to show their African allies, Africa was very important for Israel at the time, African allies that they are very serious in the anti-apartheid struggle, they are now willing, they changed the policy, Israel changed the policy, and now we are willing to support liberation movements in South Africa. So Israel wanted to support the ANC at that time, but then it was already, as I said before, was too late for the ANC, because the ANC by the time was already very deeply connected to the Soviet Union and the Egyptians and so on. So the ANC didn't really need Israel at the time. But there was another organization, as we just said, the PAC, were looking for sponsors. So they found China. Remember, Soviet Union and China were not friends in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So they found China. But China gave some things at the moment. Later they would give more, but not enough. They need more sponsors. And they went to the Israelis because they knew the Israelis are in the liberation scene. There was a scene in those in African capitals of Dar es Salaam and others, and in Ghana and Zambia and others. There was a liberation scene. And Israel was there active and very connected to the Angolan movements in Angola. Portuguese ruled Angola and in Mozambique, another movement. So they also approached Israel, and with all the language that I said, and they, one of their points was that, look, we are not communists. The ANC, they are communists now. Okay, they are going with the communists. We are anti-communists, actually. Therefore, Israel, for you, it's great, because we are kind of, they never said we are pro-American. The PAC was very nationalistic about this, but we are definitely anti-communist, okay? So at least anti-Soviet, and they approach Israel. They approach Israel also with this language of that I mentioned before, of this kind of anti-racism, and will protect. They said actually something very interesting. I want your listeners to know that the PAC wrote a letter and they said, "Look, the apartheid regime is going to come after the Jews next. We are going to protect the Jews if you help us, right, Israel? We are gonna be the guarantors of the Jewish community in South Africa." Because they'll go against the Jews. And this is why you, Israel, need to support us. Because we will be also, besides liberating South Africa from the white man, we will also protect the Jews in the process. So that was a very interesting thing. This is not a language you associate with the PAC or their successors right now, right? So that was a very interesting thing. So an African nationalism, as we said before, was a bit more connected to Zionism, kind of like the language... of nationalism. There was maybe a little bit anti kind of Arab sentiments, not too much because they also had relations with Algeria and Egypt, all those countries, but there was at least Sobukwe We see in his letters that he was a little bit suspicious of Arabs, right, or Muslims. So there was also maybe this background a little bit. So all those things kind of brought them together. And Israel was at some point, I would say, between 63 and 67, was one of the top donors to the PAC. Okay, it went down after 67, but it kept until I think the last year that they got money from Israel was 1970. Okay, so it kept after the 6-day war. And that was a very interesting episode in Israeli history.
Now, another thing that I found fascinating, you know, we've spoken about the extent to which Zionism was important for some of the African nationalists. Certainly Mandela used to read a lot of quite right-wing, actually, Zionist books and different things, which was interesting. And we've seen that Israel didn't do all that much of connection to the liberation movements sort of officially at the ANC level. But what your book also shows is that people who came from Israel to South Africa, who were former South Africans or whatever, actually had quite a big impact on some of the strategies and tactics and even the formation of things like MK, the famous one being Arthur Goldreyer. Actually, he wasn't the only one. There was actually a number of them, of these South Africans who went to Israel, got some sort of training or ideology and came back. And they were quite important for the development of the ANC in that respect. So maybe talk to us a little bit about that and what sort of relations were like, you know, because it was between Mandela and Israel at different points.
Right. So yes. So there was this connection. That was a very interesting thing that you didn't have people who were already in the ANC, came to Israel for training, and then came back to South Africa. It's not that Israel trained like South African Jews like that. Okay. Although Israel did work to and maybe even had training sessions for PAC people in the 60s. I saw that they were organizing once. I don't know. I don't have clear evidence that it actually happened. Maybe, but you did have this kind of connection that was very kind of complex, because you had South African Jews who were very progressive leaning or left wing leaning, even communist, who in 48, for example, were very excited by the establishment of Israel, and went there to help. Machal, you guys probably know a lot about Machal, right? Machal South Africa was a very big group of people who came from South Africa, very important to the IDF establishment. And some of them were progressive Jews who later turned up to be more active in the liberation movement as well. Arthur Goldreich is the most important name. There are others. Most of their names will not mean a lot to people because it's not like they never made it to national kind of awareness. But there were a few others. And Goldreich talked about this a lot in his book. And because of the trials that were also Rivonia trials, we know more about kind of his experience and how he affected Mandela and other people in the MK. And you do see that his peers in the MK, black or Jewish, were very impressed by the experience he got in the IDF, building, making IEDs and all this kind of like more combat skills that he got during the 1948 war. In Israel, and they were totally fine with that he fought in the IDF. They actually kind of admired him about this. They kind of like he told them stories about the war, and it was a kind of a source of authority, kind of combat authority. There were now no other one there in the kind of the top echelon of the MK had any real combat experience. So what he experienced, by the way, he wasn't like to combat. Actually, he didn't really participate in battles, from what I gathered. But he did. He was trained as a combat soldier, and that was the most kind of combat experience they got in the MK. So they they really liked it, and they admired him about this. He also said that when he came back to South Africa, he came back to South Africa in the 50s. And he joined the Communist Party, or was very associated with the Communist Party or communists. And those communists, a lot of them Jews, they all showed him just, extremely welcoming and very warm attitude towards his service in the IDF. It was something that like was an attraction, right? People really appreciated this, and they appreciated his knowledge that he gathered. So you had these things. By the way, we can suspect that you mentioned that Mandela read some books. So Mandela read Menachem Begin's autobiography, the Mered, right, the rebellion, right, and probably it was Arthur Goldreich, I suspect this, that who gave him the book, who actually exposed him to Begin. Okay, mm-hmm. Although Goldreich himself again was a left wing, he wasn't a Irgun or Etzel, right, Beitar guy, but this kind of connection, the ideas kind of moved very interestingly from different scenes, not intentionally so much, right? Goldreich didn't go to the IDF to fight because he wanted to liberate South Africa. He wanted that because he was excited about the state of Israel. You have another guy, Roni Kasrils, right? Who is a very big anti-Israel person right now, right? He was not in the, he didn't participate in Israeli military or anything, but he tells, before it was being pro-Israel was such a taboo, 20, 30 years ago, he wrote in his autobiography, or he was interviewed, and he said, during the 1948, he was like, I think 12 in the time, and I really wanted, I was aspiring to go to Israel and fight. I pretended I'm an Israeli soldier, and so on. So yeah, so this kind of connection and impressions really worked both ways.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Discount Wellness Clinics for Adults offers convenient and professional health care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Discount Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Discount Wellness Clinic inside Discount Pharmacies. Better health starts here. Today we're talking to Dr. Asher Lubotsky. He is from the University of Houston, talking about his new book relating Zionism to the liberation movements. Doctor, to write stuff like this just right at the moment in Israel or in South Africa for that matter, I think is, let's put it this way, probably gets you a lot of interest. But I have an interest in how people have reacted to the information that has been coming out of the book and its launch and release.
Yeah, I mean, I get good reactions. I think people who are, you know, scholarly, you know, have the integrity, right? The scholarly integrity, even if they pick sides on the, you know, on the conflict right now, they may see that this is, in the end, it's scholarship. It's all based on evidence. It's not like asbara or propaganda meant, although, you know, definitely I think it shows Israel in general in a more positive light than what you usually hear today. It does have some criticism of what happened. I do talk towards the end of how Israel did go and strengthened, right, tightened the relations with Pretoria, with the apartheid regime in the 70s. Most of the reactions I get are pretty positive, very interested in the subject. I wrote it before the war, right? The current war, I wrote it before the ANC took Israel to court in The Hague, in this kind of, let's say it, a pretty ridiculous lawsuit. I graduated my PhD in September 2023. Okay, so so I didn't know that the South Africa-Israel relations were not really in the news back then. They only became like a month or two later. Of course, nothing is good timing today, but in my very narrow professional angle, it came in a good time. Of course, I wish that this time would not come, that I don't care about that, right? I think it's a very interesting topic. It shows also, I mean, right after I finished my PhD, right, I mean, pretty much the book, right, you have the president of South Africa saying, we always supported, always, like saying the word, we always supported the Palestinian cause. You know, and there's a word for historians when you say, oh, when you hear the word always, you need to be very suspicious, right? Then I wrote something that shows that no, you have not always supported the Palestinian cause, actually. That became very interesting.
Absolutely fascinating. And there's all sorts of stuff in the book about if perhaps one day you woke up in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning and wondered, you know, what did the PAC and the ANC and the communists think about the Suez war, for example, and the Sinai war? Well, actually, that has it in the book. And there's a lot of other interesting anecdotes, things from cultural perspectives, just a fascinating part if you're interested in South Africa and in Israel history. Dr. Wen, is the book been officially launched? Do you have plans to come to South Africa to talk about it? Like, what is on the agenda for it now?
Great question. Yes. So, yeah, the book is...
Oh, dear, we seem to have lost Dr. Asher Lubotsky there. And he was just about to give us the details for the book. So I will then give those to you. Then you will, I can highly recommend going to go and find it. But it is called Shifting Solidarities, the South African Anti-Apartheid Movement's Perceptions of Zionism by Dr. Asher Lubotsky. You can get it on Amazon and other places where they have books that are sold. It is fairly new on the shelves, only in the last few weeks and months. So if you're interested in this topic, I highly recommend it. I found it very, very interesting, especially at the moment. If you want to understand where the current ANC is thinking, why it's doing some of the things that it's doing, I would suggest going to do it. So that's Shifting Solidarities, Shifting Solidarities, the South African Anti-Apartheid Movement's Perception of Zionism, and well worth a read. Now, on top of this, or connected to it, I think, is a very interesting thing that happened in the last in the last couple of weeks. It was an election in Efumuleni. And what happened there in Everton was that there was a by-election. I think sometimes ward councillors die or they get moved, and they had to have a by-election. And as a result of this by-election, we actually had we have to run the election, and we had for the first time ever in the history of certainly post-apartheid South Africa. We had the DA winning a township ward, effectively, right? It's a ward that's mostly black South Africans, some colored South Africans, a small amount. And the ward actually went to the DA. And this has never happened before. You know, the DA tends to be a suburban party. And it's a fascinating thing because the question is this just a one-off that's just happened by mistake? You know, it was cold and not enough people came out for the ANC, or does it show something else? And what you look at the trend lines, you will see that actually it isn't such a strange one-off, and it might be a signal for what things start to happen in the upcoming elections that we have in November. So we're going to be chatting about that just after this. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
With you, I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 927 Studio, and we're talking today about a sort of potentially a murmur, but maybe an earthquake that has happened in the electoral cycle. Everton, Efumuleni, electing a DA ward councillor for the first time ever in the history of the country. And the question is why? What actually happened? And so there's a few things that are going on at the moment which have led to the fact that this can actually occur. The first one is just as you've seen over time, you've seen the share of the ANC vote sort of going down and down and down over a period. The last one in 2021, they got 50%. Before that was up in 60, 70, whatever. And then they've just been decreasing the vote share. So that's first of all. And once you fall below 50, these sorts of things can happen. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the DA managed to increase its vote, not by much. In percentage terms, actually, it was quite a lot because they basically doubled their percentage. So, but But because it's a small, these are small turnout elections, for some by-election just before a main election, not a lot of people turn out. And so there was these, there was this small turnout, and the DA managed to push its numbers just up a little bit. At the same time, you had smaller parties, sort of localized parties or parties to the left of the ANC. So you had the South African Communist Party. They were taking off a chunk of 3%. There was some local parties that were independent candidates. You had the EFF actually lost some votes. You had MK. So you had all of these. And you had the PA. That was the other one. The PA got a few more votes than it did last time. And all of these really took votes away from the ANC. And so it basically pulled the ANC down to the same percentage point as the DA, which is, but in absolute terms from votes, less than them. And that is enough in a ward council election to make sure that the DA actually won. Now, the question is going to be, are we going to see that display itself going forward in the next election? I think you could very much see it. We have a system which has ward councillors and has what's called PR councillors. So it's also the proportion of votes you get plus the ward councillors that you get. But what it might actually mean is that wards where the ANC had representatives might go away in this election and not just the overall percentage. And these smaller parties who are pulling away numbers from the whole thing might actually contribute to that further demise of the party. So it is interesting. The SACP signaling very, very hard that they're going to be contesting. So if they snatch 3% across the board, it could be quite a lot. So who knows? Maybe this is the start of a new cycle in South Africa and a very wounded ANC. Brings us to the end of the show for today. Thank you to everyone who helps put the show together. Vusi on the sound, Craig, who pushes all the big red buttons, and you, dear listener, who joins us every single week. Do join us again next week on Studio 972.